Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shani, and this is The Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this. Welcome, Leadershifters, to another episode of The Leadershifter Show with yours truly, Shani Magoski. I am very excited for you to meet today's guest. Her name is Jeanette Botha, and she's joining us today from Germany. But Jeanette is a true global citizen. She grew up in South Africa and spent time living in Singapore, and now she's in Germany. She speaks Afrikaans, English, self-taught in German upon going to live in Germany. And in addition to being a fellow coach, she also is director of sales training and development at a global company. So she sees things from all sides. So I think you guys are going to be very interested to hear what she has to say today in our conversation, which primarily is going to revolve around presence and how to really take control of your career. And one of the things that I love about Jeanette is how open she is and even vulnerable to talking about a huge career mistake that she made, which is one of the reasons that she's so passionate about coaching others through career, you know, ups and downs. So that being said, Jeanette, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Shani. I'm so happy to join you.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here. And as always, I just want to start off with the Reader's Digest version of your story. So tell us how you got from South Africa to Singapore and then to Germany. And then I want to drill down further, especially into your South Africa experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just recently had an interview actually in my corporate role. And it was a great experience just to look back at the journey that I took after I finished school. So I started actually directly after school, I started to work because I could not decide what I wanted to study. And I think it was probably a sign that whatever was on the curriculum at that point was not something that really triggered me or was really interesting to me. So I started to work directly after high school and just loved working. It's crazy to say it, but I just really enjoyed, firstly, meeting very interesting different people and working on projects that I believe that I would not have been exposed to if I went to university at that point. And so I really enjoyed that, worked from being a branch secretary all the way to a payroll administrator. Eventually moved into customer training slowly but surely. Before that, I had 2.5 years in recruitment. All of this was in South Africa. And then in 2008, I got a fantastic opportunity with a company I'm working for now in Singapore. So that's when I moved there as a regional sales training manager for Southeast Asia, Australia, New Zealand. A big deal for me because, you know, coming from South Africa, all of a sudden in Asia and all these different countries and traveling and, you know, just the whole thing was
it's a fantastic. Big territory to be in charge of. It's really a lot of travel. Like, people don't realize how big Southeast Asia really is.
Absolutely. And it's so different in culture. You know, if you go from Thai to Indonesia, New Zealand, Australia, they're all very, very different. And it was such an interesting experience for me because you just go into a country, you meet people with a different set of values and priorities and the way that they operate as humans and in their collective cultures. It was just fascinating, honestly, fascinating for me.
Yes.
And so I spent 4 years there, and then I moved to Germany in 2011. And this is where I am now. I was initially head of sales training for Europe, then became head of sales training globally, which was again spreading out to China as well as Latin America, etc. And actually just recently I was promoted into a sales development role, which is now away from training, but still in sales.
Got it. So natural progression, mostly through training, development, leadership, and with these global roles. So one thing you said was so many different cultures, especially across Southeast Asia. How did you familiarize yourself with all the cultures in advance of communicating with and collaborating with your peers in all these different countries? Because that could be quite a daunting task, and you never want to put your foot in your mouth culturally, although it's bound to happen.
It is bound to happen. I think it happens with just about everyone. I was well prepared for it because in South Africa, we've got a very diverse culture and country. In South Africa, not a lot of people know it, but we have 11 official languages. And so it's just, and that is just the tip of the iceberg when you talk about the different tribes and cultures and heritages that we have. So I was a bit prepared, understanding that people think and see things differently than what I would necessarily. But I went quite granular. I had like little books that I bought about each and every country, about their culture. So I still remember flying to Singapore. I was based out of Singapore, and reading the different little books to prepare me for the different countries. And then also just before I went into a country, I would speak to my contact in the country, just understanding how things work, mostly about the business, how they are structured. But then you could also understand, you can pick up some of the things that's very specific about the culture. So that's how I prepared myself.
Got it. Yeah, I had similar situations before the pandemic. I was traveling around the world, especially with a couple of big Fortune 500 companies to some of their offices across EMEA, Asia, India, et cetera. And I was doing a lot of the same work and training and development. But before I went to any country, I'd speak to my main contact there and check in to see if some of the content was maybe too Americanized, like if they would get some of the pop culture references that creep into my training and movie references, and, you know, even just what are the local challenges that your leaders are facing or your sales force is facing with their customers, to really try and localize the training. And I think people very much appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's how you make it relevant for them. Well, I think also one thing that really helped me was already I had a coaching mindset going there. So it was not me arriving and telling everyone how you should be doing things. It was really trying to understand what is their perspective and their reality. And how can we apply the learning and the training in their environments? Because, for example, how we coach and how we develop our teams are different from or seen differently in the different cultures all over the world. And you have to overcome some of those objections in different ways. I would say probably your Australians are more open to coaching in the way that we would teach it than some of our other hierarchical cultures.
Right. As promised, I want to unpack your experience in South Africa, especially as it relates to apartheid. It's a rare opportunity to get the perspective of someone who lived through it. And part B of the question, how did it impact the work you do?
Thank you for that question. It is fascinating when I think back about just what my life was like during apartheid. My mom gave me my childhood album just a few years ago, and I was just flicking through it, and I came across a photo of us at holiday, or on holiday, and you could immediately see the situation apartheid in that picture. It was the white family, you know, I was on like these small bumper cars, and then there was a black man who was helping us to get electricity into these small cars. Mm-hmm. And it was just in that moment that I, you know, you grow up and you don't know it. Because I was 12 when Nelson Mandela was already released. So we started to go through change. But it took a few years before we could see any differences.
Absolutely. That's a monumental change. And right, it's not going to happen overnight.
No. And the thing is, what is fascinating also for me is my perspective and my experience is so different from many other people. So I can only share just how I experience it as a white South African. But someone who is African or Indian or Asian going through that period in South Africa, it's completely different experiences. We had complete different worlds that were running parallel to each other. It's very interesting.
So segregation in the truest form.
Yeah. I read Trevor Noah's book, Born a Crime.
Me too. I love the book.
It's fantastic. And what he said there, which is quite interesting, is that our government at that time were very, very smart in how they did that, because they almost had a casting system. So they not only pinned white South Africans against people of color, they also created animosity between the different races as well. So everyone's basically against each other. And the police had then a much easier time to manage the situation. So yeah, so we were completely segregated. And I could not vote in the first free elections. I was still too young. But the changes came when I moved into the workforce. So of course, at that time, there was mostly white people in the roles. And so our South African government, our new government, implemented something called BEE. Black empowerment, which meant new positions needed to be filled with people of color. And what is also interesting is you've got a ranking. So a black female is better to employ black female first before a black male. And so until you get to the white male who was and is still at this point, the last person that you should employ. So yeah, it's very interesting. And the challenge was that our generation moving into the employment market at the age of 18 were the most impacted by decisions made 10, 20, 30 years ago. So yeah, it was really hard and good. And actually, I feel very happy to have been part of that process.
Right. And I remember pre-show, one of the things that you came away with that has served you in your career is an aversion to groupthink, because you saw firsthand how toxic that could be. Because for years, people just accepted that system as normal and didn't fight it or object to it. They just sort of were like, okay, that's the way it is. Maybe not even recognizing how wrong it was.
No. And you're absolutely right. It has a very big, it's a very big driver of me when we all look the same and we all think the same and we all have the same education, that I get a little bit agitated. I have to say, I feel like an energy. And I think that also motivated me to be in a more international environment where we speak different languages, have different beliefs, religious or values, how we work within our families. And I just find it fascinating to understand and see how people do these things differently. I don't always have to do it the same way or see it the same way, but it's just interesting to see that.
Yes.
And I also saw, to be very honest, I saw how fear drives people's behavior and make decisions about what we're told could happen if things change. And that goes from all the different angles. So it was such a complex system. And I think South Africa will always have effort to move towards, you know, one direction as a country.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so I'd love to shift gears and ask you about what drew you to coaching? What happened in your career that compelled you to, you know, to get an ICF coaching credential and start focusing in the niche that you did?
Mm-hmm. So coaching, I think, was always part of my fabric, I would say. I always loved to develop people. And maybe that sounds a bit arrogant, but I love to spend, I would like that when people work with me, that there's an impact on them. That it's not just a meeting or it's not just a project, but there was an impact. I contributed something. So that I feel was always part of my fabric. But I started to move into coaching and specifically presentation skills coaching because I, like we mentioned in the beginning, made a massive career mistake in 2016. And yes, it was a mistake. And of course, you know, your career goes into a positive direction, but it was absolutely a mistake. And the mistake that I made was we had a change in our organization. So mm-hmm. my direct line manager left the business due to illness, and it was a shock for everyone. It was really a big shock. And in that moment, when he left to recover and get his health back, we reported into one of our very, very senior people in the organization. Now, I think, to be honest, Chaney, that there was a little bit this children should be seen and not heard culture that I still had in me, which is that whenever I deal with people of that's more senior than I am, I have a different dynamic than, you know, that makes maybe easier for other people. So I tend to be quiet, understand that person is the lead in the meeting, and I step back a bit, which is something I am aware of. But in that moment, that year, 2016, I then made the decision in this crisis moment to put my head down and do my work. Just focus on my project, implement it, get it done well, and make sure that I do the right thing for the business. Mm-hmm. Everyone else in my team, in our team, did the same, but they also made sure that they had meetings with our interim boss, this very senior leader. And they positioned their projects, they explained their progress, they got resources and funding for future projects. And I was completely silent, not visible, nowhere on the map. And that was a big mistake because they were managing up. They were positioning themselves. They were communicating. They were visible. And I was missing. Mm-hmm. And in my estimation, the promotion I got in July was probably 2 years later than it should have been. So in my estimation, my decision to be quiet and not visible cost me about 2 years in my career development. So big mistake. I was behind everyone in my team. When our new leader came on board, I had to fight my way back to be visible and accepted and seen as being relevant to making an impact.
Right. And I can imagine what was going through your mind at the time. It's just, you know, we've got a change in leadership. The best thing I can do is just concentrate on doing what I know and doing it well, and good work gets rewarded. And I mean, I think a lot of people, especially women, feel like that excellent performance is automatically going to be rewarded. And the reality is, and I talk to clients about this all the time, people don't know what they don't know, including our bosses. They don't know what we're doing on a day in, day out basis. And some of them feel like, oh, but I don't really, I'm modest and I don't like to self-promote. Well, there's a line. If you're doing it in an arrogant, braggy way, then yes, it's self-promotion. If you're doing it in a way that is keeping them informed about the value that they're at, that the value that you're adding, it's managing up. And we have to do that. It might be distasteful, but we have to do it, or else we're doing ourselves a disservice, as you learned.
Yeah. And I think what I hear a lot of people in my arena say is it's almost like it's either or. It's either you do great work or you promote. You know, so and it's not the truth. It's, for me, it's like two legs. Right. My quality is there. My expertise I've put into the project, and now I need to tell people about it. Because the thing is, if I look at my calendar, I had a back-to-back day today, and I'm sure half of, if not more, of the world's population had a back-to-back day. It's almost impossible for me to know what someone else is really doing on their projects unless they tell me. And so it's almost like I feel it's my obligation, my responsibility to make sure that the people in my team know what I'm doing and what is the impact that I'm making.
Right. And that they feel comfortable coming to you to let you know, like you have an open invitation. And maybe that wasn't the case with the interim person that you reported to. That person was probably so busy trying to pick up the threads of his predecessor and set the stage for his successor. And, you know, and that's an understandable situation to be in, but then the onus really falls on you to make sure that he knew what you were doing. I like what you just said, that it's not either or. And so many people engage in that either or thinking. So it's not binary. You're not keeping your head down and doing great work that will speak for itself. And you're not just full of shit, you know, self-promoting and brown nosing, right? There's a continuum. And so I want to just put a challenge out there to those of you watching or listening to think about where you fall on that scale. And if you're too skewed in one direction or another, and what do you need to do to be more balanced in service of your career success? So think about that. And if you're struggling or want help thinking through how to pivot a little bit to shift your approach, of course, I'm available to be hired for coaching, as is Jeanette.
Perfect. Everyone needs a coach.
Absolutely. The best leaders all have coaches. Yes,
for sure.
Okay. And so that's what you learned from making the career mistake. And once you realized it, what did you start doing differently?
I started to use everyday meetings instead of sitting there and just wishing it was over and grumping and being unhappy about the fact that I've got meetings. I used my meetings. So whenever we had a team meeting, I made sure that my update was clear, that I used my presentation skills, which I got from all the years of training, to explain my projects clearer, because sometimes my training projects are quite complex and people who are not in learning and development, just it's harder to understand. So sure. I really focused on doing that. And even in basic meetings that I was not supposed to speak, I would either ask a question or share an idea, but I made a goal of speaking. And just use what is already in my calendar. That was the first part of it.
No. Great. Okay. So speaking up, being visible in a way that adds value.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And with the opportunities that's already in your calendar, that's already there for you. Because I think sometimes we think we go to a meeting, that's all it is, but that is actually an opportunity. And when you have 3 minutes or 5 minutes to present, reality is, in my opinion, that you are on stage. People look at you, they listen to what you say, they listen to how you say it many times more than probably what you say. So all of that is opportunities to either use and position yourself, because remember, the quality is already there, or miss out.
Right. So the advice is pay attention to how you show up in meetings, because you're always being watched, for better or for worse. And we have to be intentional about the impact that what we do or say in the meeting has, including if we're checked out or we're multitasking or not paying attention. Those things will either directly or subliminally impact other people's impressions of us.
Yes, definitely. I completely agree.
So when you coach people, what are some of the key pieces of advice and coaching, you know, tips and tricks that you tend to use?
I think that there's the challenge with presentation skills is that we've probably heard most of the advice already before. And I always say knowing something and doing something is two very different things.
Yep.
So my encouragement would be, which everyone I say to hates doing this, but my encouragement would be when you prepare for your meeting, just take 10 minutes to record yourself. If you have a lot of courage and you feel like doing it, do a video as well. So that you can see what you look like when you speak. And that's probably the hard part. Plus, we don't like to hear our own voices.
Right.
And that's why people stop away or step away from that. But when you record yourself, you hear your filler words, you hear maybe if you speak too fast, or if you use corporate speak.
Yeah.
And by corporate speak, I mean things like, you know, end of play and, you know, circle back and these things. I think it takes away from your message. Just say, can you send it to me by the end of today? But that's probably more pet peeve than anything else.
You're right. So there are tons of that, like, corporate speak to the point where there's funny videos and memes that make fun of that stuff. And you know, if a phrase has made it to a meme, then it's probably time to stop using it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, and that's why I say the recording shows us the little things that we do, probably more amplified because you listen to it specifically. Maybe people don't hear every single thing that you do, but it's a good direction to show you what you sound like.
Absolutely. And when you said people hate it, what came up for me it immediately, even before you said it, was to record yourself, was then it's probably exactly what they need if they hate it.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable, but it gives you the biggest results.
Yeah. And nobody else is going to see that video. So really, folks, what's the big deal?
Exactly. And they already see you in any case, what you look like and what you sound like. They know you. So you're not changing that. That's who you are. So you might as well just listen to yourself as well.
For sure. What else do you recommend?
So, the recording and listening to the filler words. I think also a big tip that I have is to expect to be nervous, especially if you are not always comfortable to speak up.
Okay.
You know, or when you ask a question. And I think we focus on trying to get the feeling to not be there or to be calm and relaxed. But it helps me just to expect to be nervous so that when I have to present and I have that fluttering or I can feel my heart beating, I just understand that it's my body getting ready for fight or flight. You know, I'm in action and I just expect it. So that would be my second tip, just expect it.
Right.
And my third one would be, especially for people who work in a international environment, is the speed of by which you speak. Because I think it just first language, whenever you speak in your own language to people who speak your language, you are much faster than people who don't necessarily speak local or native languages that we present in. And that changes the engagement that you get from the group. So, you know, if I'm completely selfish around that, it's just good to speak in such a way that people stay engaged with you, that they don't switch off and feel like they can't follow your message.
Absolutely. And I can only imagine that that's partially from your personal experience, maybe back when you were learning German, a tough language to learn. I don't know firsthand, but I have some friends who moved to Germany and had to learn German in order to function and get jobs. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy language. So I'm guessing there were many occasions where you had to ask people to slow down when you were learning.
Absolutely. And I was also coming from English speaking South Africa into countries like, for example, Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, where everyone speaks English, but it's just completely different environment. So that's also where I got the feedback. And you know what, Shani, what was the hard part is sometimes I would make jokes that only South Africans could understand, because, you know, talk about corporate speak or culture speak. And then you stand there in front of a group and they're like, oh, not so sure what that was all about. So
yeah,
there was a few lessons learned there.
For sure. Something that's funny in one language is not funny in another language. I mean, or even in the same language, like there are some colloquialisms that they use in the UK that would be considered offensive in the US.
Exactly.
And I'm not going to say what they are.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, just the way that we say things are different from country to country. So it's sometimes the joke that the US and the UK speak the same language, but they're divided by English.
That's right.
Yes, exactly.
So true. So which brand of English did you grow up learning in South Africa?
British. So British. So the S's in organization, it's an S, not a Z. And
you put U's in your words. Right. You wait on a queue and you put things in your diary.
Exactly.
Or in your calendar.
In your car, in your boot.
Yep, yes, exactly. Boot, the trunk.
Yeah, and you eat mince, not ground beef, you know, so yeah, it's all these different words. It's so fascinating.
Yes. I guess still the impact of British colonialism hundreds of years ago, that they speak the Queen's English in South Africa and India and so many other countries around the world.
Yeah, exactly. Singapore, Hong Kong as well.
Absolutely.
Very, 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 yes. Very interesting. Yeah.
So Jeanette, I understand that you are launching a 6-week program to help folks who want to improve their presentation skills and their career visibility. Tell us about that.
Yes, I'm very proud of that. So it is a program called Confidence in Coaching. Oh, Confidence in Presenting. My apologies. Confidence in Presenting. And it is really focused on, first of all, building the confidence. I think that when you have a strong base of, I can do this, I'm still building my skill, but I can learn this, into your presentations and going into your meetings, then your whole energy is different when you present. So we start off with that. And then I work through the basics, so the foundational skills for presenting. And I think also what I find so interesting about presentation skills is many times people think it's when you're a TED speaker or standing on a stage somewhere, that's when you use it. But in actual fact, you can use presentation skills in your meetings, in your one-on-ones. It's universal. So that's why I focused on the basic skills as well. And then I move into the next 2 weeks into more advanced skills, not too much, because you know you can only digest that much within a 6-week program. So that is what I have available. I'm launching that in Q1. So at the moment, I'm running actually a Confidence in Presenting challenge, a free challenge that's also on my website.
Okay.
And that's a 4-day challenge. Yeah, and so that's a 4-day challenge. I made it in a way that it's really 5 minutes maximum that people spend to consume the content. You get an email and a short video, and with skills that I've not seen in other trainings or challenges before. So I wanted to make it unique, that it's not like the same old, same old.
Right.
And so that is available right now on my website, JeanetteBuerta.com. And then in Q1, I launched my 6-week program for those who want to take it further.
Oh, I love that. Okay. And spell Jeanette Botha, just so that people make sure they're typing in the correct spelling to find the challenge and the course.
Fantastic. Yes, I will do. So it's JeaNeTTE. And botha.com. So don't put the and in the URL there, but JeaneteBuerta.com.
Great. And I will also put that in the show notes with a link to your website, but just in case.
Okay. Thank you.
Any parting words of wisdom that you want to share with leadershifters before we wrap it up?
Yes, thank you. I recently found research that shows found that we spend 30% of our time communicating verbally in our careers. And when you look at the 3%, you know, you see it's the 3%, but it's actually a third of our time is spent speaking and communicating. And I think also, well, I know as you grow in your careers and you go up the corporate ladder, you just communicate more and more and you organize more and more, but you do less and less. So, you know, like physical implementation, that goes to the team. So you might as well, in my opinion, get the presentation skills under your belt, be comfortable with speaking, because it's becoming more and more as you progress, and it gets more impromptu as well. And so that's my message. So a third of your time already, and as we grow in our careers, it just gets more.
Absolutely. I always say to people, the main job of a leader is to drive results through others and create more leaders, which, right, doesn't sound like you're doing a lot, but you're actually creating the future. There's no more important role in an organization than building more leaders and creating a viable succession plan. And that has to be done years in advance with lots of forethought.
Yeah. And you're right. And especially to the female leaders, if we are silent, nobody sees the examples. So the young Gen Zs who are moving in and later the alpha generation, they won't have examples if we are quiet and only doing the work and not visible. So I feel it is also our responsibility to show the people in the organization, the youngsters, examples of strong female leaders.
Yes. And, you know, on that note, I want to encourage any folks that are early or even mid-stage career, if you haven't done so already, find a sponsor to help you. And that can be a woman or a man, but you want someone who has your back and is going to give you honest feedback that maybe other people won't.
Yeah. And that's a great point, Shani, because when you asked me that question in the beginning, I hesitated because there were three things that I did to change my career in 2016. And the second thing was finding strong sponsors. And they were all men, because that was just in my environment, the people who had influence. But that made such a difference. People helping me to be in front, pushing me into roles that I probably would not have stepped in unless I had some good coaching. So having strong sponsors is a must.
Fantastic. So I'm just going to do a quick wrap up to summarize all the great things that we heard today. So first of all, the world is more global than ever. Even if you're working from home and you feel like you're pigeonholed in some small town, we're operating on a global basis. And I think it's important to do what Jeanette and I discussed right out of the gate, which was be culturally sensitive and learn about other cultures that you're going to do consistent business with, and ask questions to educate yourself so that you don't inadvertently make a faux pas. I really enjoyed hearing about your apartheid experience and how it informed, you know, sort of your awareness as you came to realize the toxicity of that. And I think one of the reasons that it excites me that we talked about it was just the environment right now with the attention on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Same thing, like we need to like move past some of the norms of the past and look forward to do what's right and what's just. Thank you for sharing your career mistake. And I couldn't agree with you more that we have to have that balance between managing up and doing great work. And of course, your tips on speaking and being more visible in terms of remembering, even if it just seems like a simple meeting, you are on stage, and every time you open your mouth, you're making an impression. Or even when you're not opening your mouth, your body language, your facial expressions, etc. So if you have that eye roll thing going on, folks, people are reading you like a book. I love the idea that folks should record themselves, as painful as it is. And it is painful because I've done it. But again, no one's watching. So it will benefit you if you can manage through the self-embarrassment of looking at yourself on video, and you'll get more used to it for sure. And then of course, remembering that nerves are just part of it, and moderating your pace depending on who you're talking to. Again, especially in this global world where, sure, almost everybody speaks English nowadays, but their comprehension might not be as good as a native. And so we just have to be conscientious about how quickly we talk in service of making sure that our message is coming across clearly. So Jeanette, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a lot of fun. Have a great evening since you're in Germany. And I know that we are recording this podcast sort of around dinner time for you.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I had so much fun. Thank you. I got so much of energy speaking to you. And I just want to wish your listeners all the very best with their careers and their businesses. There's a lot of great things out there for us in the coming years. I'm sure of it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And Leadershifters, you know how to find me, Shaney@theleadershiftproject.com. Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn are all under the Leadershift Project. And Twitter handle is @LeadershiftProj, because there's not enough letters to spell out the whole thing. All right, folks, till next time.